As like a product manager and someone who's really trying to keep track of what my team's doing, what we're building, continually asking the question is, how does this impact what we're doing? Why is it important today that we build this, that we work on this, and that we ship this to our customers? It's such an important question to ask, especially in software development, because there's endless roads you could go down when you're building a product of enhancements and optimizations and things you could get just very distracted with of when you're developing software.
What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Zach Starin. He's one of the founders at Collectibles Software Solutions. They're a software company that helps collectibles dealers, primarily in the coin collectibles space. Super cool. Super interesting how this problem came up and how Zach got into the collectibles industry. So he's taught a framework for building products and solutions, because even before he was one of the founders of this company, he's been doing UX design, product management throughout his entire career. We also talk about what to prioritize when you're building a product. We talk about this sleep aid that he has that helps him get better sleep, and not just that, but wake up better and less tired. And some of the fun stuff he does outside of work. So, like painting, it was really fun talking about his philosophy behind art. I really liked this episode, and I hope you enjoy this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
And with that, let's get started. What's up, Zach? How you doing today?
Good, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. And I gotta say, you are the first guest that I've ever had that's seen me play out in the wild. That's seen me in the band. That was so funny. You just showed up out of nowhere. I was like, oh my God, it's Zach.
Yeah, I was sitting back there having a drink, and then I looked up. I was like, is that Armand? That can't be. And I was like, oh, it is. And then I pulled up your Instagram. I was like, oh, that's the band he plays for. Wow, what a coincidence.
Yeah,
Anyway.
that's so funny.
Well, that was
Yeah, your
awesome.
brother's a cool dude. I'm excited to have him at the meetings as well.
100%. Yeah, I think he's looking forward to it, so.
All right, so for the listener, this is Zach Starin, one of the founders of Collectible Software Solutions, which is a really unique company. It's a vertical SaaS, specifically designed to help the collectibles industry. From what I read, it's like mainly coins. Am I getting that right, or is it all types of collectibles?
Yeah, eventually we want to take on all collectibles. Right now, it's focused directly on coins. That's kind of like the first market within collectibles we're building for. But yeah.
Sweet. So you mind talking about how you got here? Like, what got you into the collectibles industry in the first place?
Yeah. Well, I'll rewind a little bit just to give you a little bit of a background on myself. So, I've been in tech consulting now for about 8 years or so. And my background really is in product design and UX and UI, and did a lot of consulting, and was approached by some of my current partners right now in this venture to help them with a redesign of their current software solution. And as I was taking a look at it along with my partners, we were like, "Well, yeah, we could definitely rebuild this for you." And revamp it, but have you guys considered the fact that maybe other people could use this, once we rebuild it? And so that's kind of how the venture started off. And really, my exposure to collectibles started at a young age. Started going to some coin shows, and just kind of have always been somebody that's interested in like gadgets and kind of small stuff like that, collectibles. And so as a kid, was exposed to collecting coins and other stuff, and so it was a natural progression to kind of start working on this project, and then really, looking at it as a venture, and then eventually turn it into a business. But yeah, that's kind of a background on it.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. So what kind of, I know, okay, we'll get into collecting's kind of a hobby, but I'm like really curious. I gotta ask now, like, what kind of coins do you have? Like, what kind of collectibles?
Yeah.
Like, this is so cool.
So as a kid, like really, it was like anything I could get my hands on, right? Because you don't have a lot of money, so it's just like whatever. I collected state quarters and stuff like that. A lot of kids get into that pretty easily. More recently, I've started collecting Morgan silver dollars and the more modern ones. And that's been kind of like my segue into coin collecting. Before that, I got into sports cards, mostly football and basketball. And then more recently, I've also started investing in some of the sports NFT collectibles as well. So,
like the NBA one that's Top Shot, I think it's called?
I don't have any of the Top Shot ones. I have bought a lot of the Panini ones, which is Panini is one of the larger manufacturers of sports cards today.
Yeah.
So I was interested in investing in their NFTs just because of their brand already and kind of how many sports cards they already produce. I couldn't really get my hands on a snapshot actually when I first was trying to get into it. So maybe
that's something interesting to mention. So we've talked in the past how the collectibles industry and kind of your customers tends to be on the older side because it's people with a lot of money and they're dealing with like collectible art dealers, things like that.
Yeah.
Yet the new kind of age and generation of collecting seems to be going towards NFTs and things like that. How do mm-hmm. those two worlds meet?
Well, I hope soon that they meet very seamlessly. You know, there's kind of a split today, I think, in the collectible space of people who really see collecting as a hobby first. And then really you have institutional money starting to flow into the space and looking at these collectibles as alternative assets, which is mm-hmm. what I believe they are. And truly like an investment. So, you know, there's a tension there between collectors and people who really think it's a hobby and then, you know, investors who are coming into the space. Being able to put these assets eventually on a blockchain and be able to see really a lot of the data and information around them, I believe is the future. Because collectibles have like a lot of unique data requirements as far as like when they were produced, how many of them were produced, what their grade is, how many times they've exchanged hands, who the last buyer was, who the last seller was. Obviously, price is a huge piece of this as well. It fluctuates quite a bit depending on the market and demand. You know, there's external factors that go into it, especially like sports cards and some of the other collectibles where you have real-world events that influence the price of an item, you know, exponentially. And a good example of that would be like Patrick Mahomes, all his sports cards this year, you know, were on a really good progress, making a lot of progress, really. And then the fact that he won the Super Bowl, you know, his cards, the value has continued to rise on those. So from an investment perspective, like those were really good to be buying earlier this year and have really maintained their value. So
in that sense, it's kind of similar to sports betting where you're kind of taking a gamble that this team or this player, they're going to do well this season and you can hold on to it for a long period of time. Like let's say in 20 years, you can say, I have an original of when Mahomes won this Super Bowl.
Correct. Yep. So you'll have a lot of people doing you know, speculating on those types of things. There's also, and that kind of rarity or like circumstances can appear in different collectibles as well. Like when the U.S. Mint releases like a certain coin that's going to be a limited release and then they drop it on the website, you know, there's only going to be maybe a couple hundred thousand of them. So they get snatched up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So there's scarcity and rarity that comes into play as well. But, yeah, it's also interesting to see like the different world events that affect collectibles as well.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So now collectible software solutions. So what are you guys doing? Like who are you guys serving? Like how's that going?
Yeah, so primarily what we are building today is software for collectibles dealers. And so we're really going after dealers because we believe that's where collectibles get touched the most, right? So you have individuals who are specialized and have a lot of industry knowledge about specific collectibles, and they've been working with them for many, many years. And so they're familiar with, you know, their pricing, their demand, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of these individuals obviously were got into the space because they were collectors, and then they turned their passion into a business, which is always awesome. That's kind of always been my passion as well, and my mission really of recent that I've cleared in my head is that I really want to build software for people who are passionate about what they do, especially if they run small businesses.
So one thing I wanted to touch on is something you said on you came to this mission that you want to build software solutions for people that are passionate about what they do. How did you come to that realization? Like, how do you reach a mission for yourself personally? That's something that I myself have been working on. And yeah, I'd love any and all tips on that.
Yeah. It's honestly become more clear just over time. And even as recent as, you know, in the past couple weeks, really spending some time asking myself what I'm passionate about. And it's connected to me really this idea of empowering people who want the freedom to pursue their passion. And people who want to start a business and take control of their own destiny is something I absolutely love, and I want to empower people to be able to do that. I think as I've spent some time just thinking about that and kind of married or coupled that together with this idea that I really love building software, I think I'm pretty good at it, and so that helps too. Yeah, what it really comes down to is I want to empower people to be able to build a business off of what they are really passionate about. And in particular, collectibles, I think, was a perfect start into that, because you have people who really enter the space of collectibles from a hobby perspective. You know, they grew mm-hmm. up wanting to open sports cards with their grandparents, or,
yeah,
you know, collecting coins from their dad's pocket when he gets home from work. Like, there's a lot of really great stories and narratives that come from the collectible space that I really connected with, and seeing a lot of the younger generation wanting to get into collectibles and then be able to create a business from it that they can actually live off of and be successful at is something that gets me excited. So, especially when I take a look at some of the spaces within the collectibles, so like coins, for instance, there's a very large demographic of older folks. So eventually, at some point, I think, you know, the younger generation is going to have to step up into that space and really see coins as an alternative asset and hopefully be able to build a business off it. But there's other, you know, ventures that I think I would love to get into in the future. But yeah, it all surrounds this concept of wanting to empower people to do what they're passionate about.
Do you think that if the younger generation doesn't have as much of an interest, that we're going to see a lot of devaluation in some of these collectibles?
That's possible. I'm conflicted sometimes with the thought of, you know, that maybe collectibles just needs to go viral, you know, like on TikTok or something.
You have
individuals today that would be like, oh, you know, I flipped something today, and then they're gonna, it's just become a side hustle for people, which I do think that is going to happen. I don't know that there's really anything anybody can do about it. So I believe that is going to happen. And inherently, that will at least communicate that there's value to be had in that space. Where I think the specialty, or like where people could start to really become skilled at, is just picking a niche within collectibles and just becoming really knowledgeable about it. So if you have a younger generation of individuals who are really into sports or into coins or comics or even wine or, you know, all these other emerging types of collectibles that are within that space, I really do see there being a lot of potential for people to start their own business and really get to do what they love to do. So,
yeah. What do you think has to happen for people to reach that point? Do you think the virality comes first, or do you think some guy just gotta, maybe you take up the mantle and post your findings on TikTok?
Yeah, you know, I really don't know. I think it's going to happen pretty, I hope it happens pretty organically. I've given some thought to this, you know, like Robinhood obviously brought investing to the everyday person, right? Individuals who had no concept of what investing was, or buying and selling assets, within seconds on your phone, right?
GameStop left and right.
Exactly, right? So, like, there's moments where this stuff could go viral, and then really there's the awareness is spread about the technology and the assets themselves. So, yeah, I mean, maybe potentially something like that happens. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, and I remember, okay, so we were in one of the meetings talking about how to prioritize, and this is something you said that stuck out to me, so I want to hear your take on this, but you said when you're prioritizing, you must know the difference between what's urgent and what's important, and you must do what's important first. And that took me some time to kind of like sit with, because I was like, shouldn't you do what's urgent first? But what, like, what, okay, so where'd you kind of hear that, and what is your take on that?
I don't remember exactly where I heard it. I've kept it in my notes now for at least a year or two. I might have heard it on a different podcast or from someone directly. The reason I really connected with that is as like a product manager and someone who's really trying to keep track of what my team's doing, what we're building, continually asking the question is, how does this impact what we're doing? Why is it important today that we build this, that we work on this, and that we ship this to our customers? It's such an important question to ask, especially in software development, because there's endless roads you could go down when you're building a product of enhancements and optimizations and things you could get just very distracted with of when you're developing software. And really has been, at least more recently, like something I really try to get my team to rally around is, what are we trying to do here? Why is this a priority? How is this going to bring value to the business? How is this going to bring value to our customers today? And so I think it's rooted at least a lot from my perspective in like my training and in my experience within just being a product manager and a product owner of just asking that question over and over again to stakeholders, to clients, to the team. What's our priority? Why should this be the number one thing on our list? Why is it so important? And I think when you start to ask those questions, you can get a lot of clarity and you can start to realize that some things are more important than others and that those should be prioritized first and worked on. And the only other piece that I'll say to this too is those have to align with a larger vision or a larger goal as well, right? So you can have short-term priorities and then you can also have long-term ones, and making sure that those are aligned is it's a tricky thing to do, but I think it's where you have to find that balance.
Yeah, totally. That makes sense. And that's a role I'm in right now, is kind of like developing solutions similar to what a product manager would do, but in the service space. And yeah, I totally agree. I'm currently in a phase where we're launching one of our solutions, and it's, you get really bogged down with the noise, because a lot of people have, like, there's a lot of stakeholders in this thing, and there's a lot of things going on, and everyone kind of like needs your attention at some point. And just knowing what's required to move the needle and focusing on that and kind of tuning the rest out, or like maybe scheduling it out a little bit more, or even delegating, is something that's really important.
100%. And one of the tougher parts too, I think, is that if you get involved in like the process of evaluating, let's say, like a new feature set or solving a problem, you know, your emotions can get involved, and you want to, at least for me as a designer and as a product person, like if I'm going to do it, I want to do it right. I want to do it all the way to the tens. Like, it's got to be perfect. So often, a lot of times, you know, and that could take, that could take us down a road where 3 months later, we're just trying to deliver something that we really could have evaluated as being like, well, you know, it's important. Yes, we should have it in the system, but it's only worth a week's worth of work based on like our burn rate and a lot of other stuff. A lot of times your emotions and your passion can get in the way as well when you're trying to prioritize and take a look at those things. So that can be tough, but you know, using data, let the data kind of help and make that decision for you. And
I totally agree.
And hopefully it shows you where you should be putting your energy, right?
Do you use data in your personal life, maybe when evaluating any habits or routines or anything like that?
Not as much as I should. I wish I I wish I did it more. And I know I'm probably not as good at analyzing my data, my self directed data, as it were, on my life as I think I am. But I probably could be much better at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. What? Okay. So as a designer, as someone who like builds software solutions, so let's say I came to you with an idea for a solution of how would you help me track, not like a normal habit tracking app. I feel like that exists. Yeah. Okay. So if you wanted to track the data in your life, that's important. Like how would you go about building a solution to do that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I have a pretty I have a process. It's standard for me because it's what I use whenever I'm trying to produce a product.
Yeah.
I have a process that I have kind of refined over the years of really working through what the problem is, identifying solutions, and then creating a solution for it, and just continuing to iterate on that. So really, if I could translate it into, like, if this were a startup or an application, really coming up with a problem statement. What are we trying to solve? What's the problem? And then from there, really getting into some type of deliverable. If it was an app, I'd be building out wireframes and mocking up some designs, because that's not actually touching the code yet. It's just really trying to get an idea of yeah. what we would be building. And then iterating from there. Maybe making a clickable prototype, and then as quick as possible, try and get it in front of some stakeholders or potential customers and get some feedback. And, really take off the process of, maybe building it or just continuing on with the prototypes until we're comfortable with the idea and the concept, and we've proved that people want to use it and we're getting good feedback. And then from there, start actually touching the code to build it.
Interesting. So. Okay. So to put this all in a pain point. So I want to know how my habits impact my mood. Like the things I do, how can I tell, like, what can I track the data? Like, what data can I keep up with on to tell, is this helping me or making me, you know, stagnant or upset? Like, how do I do that?
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest things I would do would probably just begin to ask some questions around what are those things in your life that are, that you think are important that you should be collecting data on. And then doing some research on, how those are correlated to what other people say as well.
Yeah.
Are important for them. And then the biggest thing too is also not trying to solve everything at once. Like maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Maybe we just identify that. I'm trying to think here, like what a good data point would be. You know, how much you connect with new people or friendships, how often you check in with people in your network or your friendship groups. Is important. In fact, here's one that was, I guess, is coming to mind right now. So I had this conversation with a friend earlier last week, and I said we just kind of agreed on this observation I had that was in friendships, a lot of times you always think the other person is going to reach out to you first to hang out.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it'd be helpful for me at least sometimes to get like a reminder or some type of nudge or something. Just like, hey, you should invite this person to go to the coffee shop with you or this kind of stuff. Because what I found is like most people assume that you'll reach out to them to hang out. And it's so neither of you actually really will reach out to each other unless one person kind of takes lead with it and facilitates it.
Yeah, 100%.
And so maybe something like, you know, something like that would help your friendships grow more. Just like a nudge. Like, hey, I've noticed you haven't texted Armand and 2 weeks, you should say, hey, what's up, and maybe find him to coffee. I don't know, like those types of nudges and stuff like that, because obviously you can get busy with life, you can get caught up in building the business, all this other stuff. But friendships and people are super important.
I agree.
So, yeah, I don't know where to go with that. It just kind of came to mind when you were saying that.
I think that's so great. Yesterday, I talked to a friend I haven't spoken to in a while, and it made me realize it all happened because I reached out to him after a fond memory. Like, I just remembered something really fun, and I was like, oh, I should hit him up, see how he's doing. And it kind of hit me that I was like, if I were to do this with all the times I would have good memories of friends that I don't talk to anymore, just like, hey, hope you're doing well. I feel like I'd be a lot better at keeping in touch, but I know I'm definitely someone who's falls under the camp of I don't reach out first. Not even intentionally. I
100%. Yeah, 100%. It's just not like my go-to mode to be that social or sometimes want to instigate like a conversation or to hang out. But I feel like of recent I've started to make some connections with friends who do that, and so it's encouraged me to start to do that with other people as well.
Yeah.
Simple stuff is as funny as it is, like my neighbor in my apartment will just knock on my door with a beer and just be like, hey, Zach, here's a beer. Hands me a beer and we chat for a minute and, you know, that's it. Like, but it's great because, like, we connect and then we've hung out outside of living here too. So it's, you know, it's just moments like that where you see people take initiative and just take a moment. And so, yeah, that's just something that came to mind, I guess, when we were talking about that. So if that was something that we were trying to, like, create a solution for, I would want to like start to analyze just, you know, how people interact with their friends, how often they reach out, which people, like, are you somebody that always waits to be reached out to? Or are you someone that facilitates more? Right. And then kind of go from there and see where the opportunity is.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that framework. That's cool. Do you have any routines you follow throughout your day?
Yes, I've started following much more rigid routines of recent. I feel like the winter time always gets me like just tired and and just low energy. So of recent, I've become much more structured. One of the great things as far as habits go that I would recommend is I use this product called a Hatch sleep aid. And so it basically... the alarm starts to go off about 30 minutes before I want to, and it's a light that essentially mocks the sunlight coming up. So you wake up very gradually, and it's not like an abrupt iPhone alarm type situation. So that's been super helpful as far as like readjusting with the schedule with time change that's happened recently, and then incorporating just... physical activity first thing in the morning. So I do yoga in the morning, and then I more recently started to switch my evening routine of working out to in the morning. And from there, then really getting into to working, because if you don't create some structure around the work-life balance, I could be working all the time, you know, if I didn't stop and make time for that. But I'm trying to think what other good routines I can throw in there. I think those are the two biggest ones. Just like a really good sleep schedule, obviously, and then working out and just connecting with your body and your mind without the interface of having to deal with all the stress of running a business first thing in the morning. It's super easy to want to get into that, check emails, start talking to people, slacking and calling, and it's just... if I don't take my 30 minutes though to really ground myself and focus on myself, then my days get really long.
No, I get it. Exactly what you mean. And well, number one, I really like that you do yoga. I've been doing that a couple times and it's so fun. Like, it's actually really nice to, what is it? So when I'm lifting, I feel like I don't have as much of that like mind body connection. They say when you're lifting weights at the gym, you're supposed to like pay attention, like focus on the muscles that you're working out on, and it's going to help grow them. And I totally believe that, but I'm usually listening to music or podcasts, so that's not really happening. But yoga, I think, is a great opportunity to like actually connect with and listen to your body. And sometimes you do hear something like, hey man, you got to stretch more. Cause that's something that pops up for me. As much as I lift, dude, I should be stretching way more.
100%.
That's for sure. Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty sweet. So Hatch Sleep Aid also, do you think it works? Like, does it help? What are your thoughts?
I do think it helps. I mean, I use it, like I said, especially when I'm trying to adjust my schedule, and start waking up earlier. So it, like I said, you can adjust it. It's a really sweet app. You can set it 15, 20, 30 minutes window of time for it to start kind of gradually turning on. It slowly wakes you up. I also have an evening routine where it starts playing, like some water sounds. And it's just like, what it does is it reinforces just your routine with sound and with light. So your senses are all kind of aligned with that.
Okay, I just looked it up. It's like a device that, so it mimics the sun by, is it one of those, does it have like the sunlight bulbs? You know what I'm talking about?
It doesn't have the sunlight bulb, but just, it's like about 6 by 8 inches wide, and it has a light on it, and there's a speaker on it as well, because you can do guided meditations and water sounds and stuff on it. And then the app part of it just kind of helps you set up your daily routine, and then from there it just kind of does its own thing.
Yeah, that looks sweet.
Yeah, definitely check it out.
I've always looking for things to improve and check out on Habits and Hobbies. I mean, that's the show, so I'll be looking into it.
Awesome.
What about any habits you've had to remove or take out of your life?
That's a good one. I mean, so one of the obvious ones, well, maybe it's not obvious for everybody. Definitely as I'm in my 30s now, realizing that alcohol intake is something that inhibits my energy and my capabilities. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Has definitely been something I've had to assess and address, as it were. During the week is really something that, during the week, I really try to avoid drinking. I was on the weekends with friends and with, in social settings, it's something I still partake in, but as far as being able to be productive and maintain a high level of energy, that's definitely something that I had to tone down, especially coming from, my days in college where I could drink a lot during the week. What else? You know, one of the things that I really started to work on in the past year was just being more structured with my day as far as my schedule. So I've used a couple techniques to block out certain windows of time to do certain activities. So whether that's a specific hour where I read and respond to emails, designate like an hour in the afternoon to maybe reconnect socially with friends or family and be very intentional about that.
Yeah.
And that's not something I do every day. That's like on Thursdays. So once a week. So I have like daily schedules and then I also have weekly schedules. And a lot of times, each of the days of the week will have a theme. And then if I have something I need to do, like something that's coming up right now in the back of my head, it's like tax preparation and all that stuff, right? Like, so Fridays for me is typically like stuff that needs to be done that's like preparation. And I'll share this metric with you that I use on my calendar to be able to organize. But what it does is it creates a framework where if there's something I need to do or that's kind of like weighing on my mind, I can put it into that bucket for that specific day. And I know that I'll eventually get to it and address it. So it reduces my stress to be like, oh, I have to right now solve this. So also ties back into the priority quote there as well. I think I learned that from a Skillshare class too. So I also need a link to that as well if you want to link
it. Yeah. Dude, so what are some of the... What are some of like the buckets your days look like? You say your days have a certain like pattern to them? What does that look like?
Yeah, I can actually tell you right now. So Mondays is execute. So that's typically where it's like I've done all the groundwork for something. It's literally just like it's time to get something done. Like send the email, finish the taxes, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Call this person. Tuesday is like my communication day. So that's like check in with everyone. Talk to friends. Call this person. Reach out to my developers. Do you need anything? How can I support you? What's going on? And these are like themes I have for each day of the week. And then Wednesdays is kind of like my align and reset. So that's just a day for me to assess everything that I've done up to that point. And then create any action items. And Thursday is advance. So advance really is like new initiatives I'm working on.
Kind of like strategy stuff.
More strategy, high level, maybe implementing like a new technique within the team or just like trying to push, as it were, myself or whatever I'm working on at that time.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And then Fridays is like reorganize, like try and assess what happened during the week, everything that went down, organize it so that when Monday rolls around, I can execute, and then starts all over again.
Yeah. And how does that, so you said you got this from kind of like a workshop you went to?
Yes. I was inspired by a workshop that I went to. And then I kind of tailored this to my own need. And then what I actually did was translate this into two different applications. So one is Todoist, which is basically
Use Todoist, and I was talking to another guest on the show previously. We're big fans. Todoist, sponsor me. I'm going to start telling everyone that this is the best.
Yeah. Maybe we can create a template actually with some of this, this stuff already in it. But so I used Todoist, and then also I was able to put those themes into my Google Calendars as well, because I've got like 10 different Gmail accounts now that I've linked all together.
Like a podcast one, I have a personal one. Yeah, I'm sure you would like, it's like a business, a personal, and all these different.
Yeah, and as an entrepreneur, I've always got like three different things that are on the back of my mind, or like small projects that are working. So I've got so many different email accounts. But anyway, I translated those same themes over into my weekly calendars as well. And so when I'm scheduling appointments and meetings and stuff like that, I will try to make sure that it fits into those days. So
yeah,
typically like my Tuesday afternoons, I'm free to jump on calls, connect with people, network, do a podcast like this. Today's Wednesday, so it's a little bit different just the way the schedule worked. But and there's flexibility within it to be able to do that. But this way, it really isn't – it's just more structured and allows me to have to think less about how and what I'm going to be doing each day. Obviously, stuff comes up, deal with it, but it's super helpful for me to organize my life in this manner right now. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sick. I like that you do that. And would you say it's been a positive shift since implementing this?
100%. It's also been – so one of the things I started doing a couple months back, I've actually since then stopped using it, but I was using a virtual assistant as well because I had so many different work streams coming in and so many different things going on, and scheduling meetings, you know, all this different stuff was just was using up too much of my capacity to solve problems and really do what I wanted to do. So Todoist was great because I just shared my calendar with her, shared Todoist, and basically used Slack, and then was able to just run from there with scheduling stuff and working on deliverables. So I believe it'll scale really well for anyone who wants to use like a virtual assistant to kind of optimize their workflows. But yeah, it's been super helpful. And then in this way too, when stuff comes up, it's just like, oh, well, I can put that onto Monday, or sorry, I can't take a call. I've got stuff I got to do.
Yeah.
It's a great framework. I highly recommend it. Check it out. And like I said, I'll send you the link to the workshop as well. And, you can link that in your notes.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah. I'll throw that in the show notes down below for the listeners. Okay, now to get into the hobby you like to do. So you say you have a lot of hobbies, but one that's been really you've been keeping up with lately is painting. First, I'm curious, like, do you like art? Like, is that one of the collectibles that really reaches out to you, is like paintings and art going to museums and stuff like that?
It is, because I think when I paint, I realize a lot of the things I'm doing are one of one. They're very, you know, nothing's going to be that canvas that I'm working on is a one of one piece of work.
Yeah.
I don't personally collect paintings right now. I could see myself getting to a place where I would like to. Right now, painting for me is just a really good creative outlet where I don't feel a lot of pressure to perform or deliver. I don't really paint for anybody other than myself. It's just a way to express myself. Hmm. And it's, you know, like I said, a creative outlet, and I've just been exploring with allowing myself to kind of be free and remove all expectations and just have fun. Whatever's in my head, I kind of want to get out on a canvas sometime. And the results are really cool to kind of see afterwards, just to see, you know, what that visually represents. And I'm not trained or anything. Like, I haven't really done a lot of painting before. This has just been something I picked up recently, doing some acrylic paints and smaller canvases. It was really inspired, honestly, when I moved into my new apartment. I didn't feel like decorating a lot, and so I was like, well, I should just paint some stuff, and I'll put that on the wall.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then it kind of took off from there, and now it's a way for me to kind of unplug, put some music on, and kind of get lost and in the zone for a couple hours in the evening or something like that if I'm feeling stressed out or need to kind of connect with myself.
Yeah, dude, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's a way to connect with yourself. That's so awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's me with music as well. Although I will say, when I perform, there's a pressure to perform. Dude, that last when you saw me, like the first half of that set, I was a little bit nervous. There was a lot of people there, but it got better when I played by myself. Yeah, I appreciate it. We are good. We all were aware. We're like, dude, we're crushing right now. But at the same time, everyone in our band was like, we've never been pushed up against the stage this much. Like, there was no space for us.
There was zero space.
And so we were just like, worried our instruments would get fucked. Like, at one point, someone unplugged my bass, but no one noticed. Thankfully, it happened at like a time when I was pausing. But you were there. You put it back.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So, there is a pressure to perform, but I think I can relate to when it's like I'm in my room on my own after a stressful work day, just like practicing, learning a brand new song. I don't want anyone to hear me learning a new song, dude. What you see is something I've practiced hundreds of times, but like a new song, it's like you really connect with the part of yourself of like, to me, maybe it's like starting with a blank canvas. You know what you're capable of. You know you're good, but at the same time, you're starting from zero. So there's a lot of work you got to do. You got to set the foundations. You got to be aware of the fact that at the beginning you're going to struggle a little bit. You're going to go slower than normal. I don't know how it is with painting. Maybe your like strokes are different. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe you could fill me in on the painting stuff. But
well, for me,
I know the process.
Yeah, 100%. One of the things too is like I like to push myself when I'm painting too, because it's one of the cool things about painting is like you can kind of screw up a little bit, but then also you can kind of paint over it. So everything is, there's a risk. Like if you start to put this paint down on it, and a lot of times, like I don't necessarily have a vision in my head of exactly where this is going to go. So it's just like, put the paint on the canvas. All right. And now what? Well, we'll add some more paint. And then you just kind of continue. It's more like maybe it's more to relate into music, more like a freestyle, like, going off the page, as it were, just freestyling. And I like to push myself to do that with painting too, and just see where things end up. Instead of trying to control every outcome or needing to have like a really
that's a
clear vision or like execution in my mind of what it could be. It's more open-ended to just let the art kind of reveal itself. And that can be really hard for me because a lot of areas of my life, like, I have to control. I have to make sure everything's structured and there's frameworks. So a lot of times when I paint, it's a place for me to kind of remove all that and just be and get into like a flow state, as it were. So
yeah, that totally makes sense. I was actually going to ask, how does that relate to like entrepreneurship and working, where it does seem like you guys have a vision, you have a direction of where you want to go, and maybe how you get there is the more like free flowing creative part, but like, you, rather than your paintings where you're just kind of like, let's see what happens here.
Yeah. I think there's definitely some similarities there. And approaching it with kind of just an open mind that I don't know what this paint stroke is going to result in necessarily down the line, but it feels right. And kind of just intuitively trusting yourself that, you know, well, this won't be that big of a mistake, and, you know, I can learn from it, and there's a bigger picture.
There you go.
Coming to fruition. But that's tough. It's tough though, especially in the world of entrepreneurship, because, you know, there's so many factors to running a business, and whether that's dealing with partners, the financial side of things, the product side, how much we're building, where we're building it, employees. I mean, just there's a never ending list of things you have to control and manage and work with.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of why I like painting these days, and it's more philosophical, I guess, in a lot of ways. It's just an experiment to push my mind, as it were.
Dude, I love it. Excellent. That's a great hobby to have. One I wish that I was skilled in, but alas, I have the musical arts, not the visual arts. All right, it's time for the closing questions. These are just a couple quick questions to get to know you a little better before we wrap up the show.
Sure.
Number one is, what kind of music do you listen to?
Ooh, I listen to a lot of different music. My Spotify, I can't remember what it's called now, but kind of the report, basically, what I listened to was just super, super broad. I love to explore different genres, and I'm a very situational music listener, so like, mood and environment is really important for me. And I also curate a lot of playlists depending on like what my mood is and what environment I'm in.
Yeah.
So you'd really have to take a look at my Spotify to see all the different stuff I listen to.
All right, right now, what, right this second, your current mood, your vibe, what playlist would you be like, what would you be listening to? What would that playlist look like?
So right now I'm trying to be productive. There's some stuff on the back of my head that I definitely need to get done. So what I'll typically do is have like more electronic synth wave, just like steady kind of rhythmic beat music going on in the background. Big fan of like synth wave music and just that kind of like electronic stuff, for being, yeah, for like working on tasks and trying to be focused, typically without lyrics, just so I can be more focused. But I listen to a lot of different stuff though in the evenings. Jazz, it's probably one of my go-tos, especially when I'm like cooking and just hanging out.
Nice. Yeah. That's, I want to get into more jazz, honestly.
Yeah. I love jazz. And anything in between, man. Rap, reggae, hip-hop, pop. Rock, if I'm in the gym. Sweet. Or just trying to turn up. It's all over the spectrum. I'll have to send you some of my Spotify playlists. You can check it out.
Yeah, I'm down. So what kind of movies or TV shows do you have? Do you like to recommend?
Well, the one I'm most excited about coming out this next week is the next season of Succession on HBO. Absolutely love that show.
Ooh, yeah, my dad's been watching that. It looks really good.
Big fan of it. Billions is also another one of those kind of like business drama shows I love to watch.
Like empire type building. Not yeah. the show Empire. I mean, like, you're building a business empire.
100%, yeah.
Although I think that's what Empire's about.
It is, yeah. But like in the music industry.
I'm not familiar.
What else have I been watching recently? There's a show on Apple TV called Servant, which is like a kind of psycho horror thriller that is pretty fun. And then I also just started watching the new season of Ted Lasso. So, and
Ted Lasso, that's right.
Yeah, it sounds like I have a lot of time to watch this stuff, but honestly, I don't. It's just when I get a chance, I try and spend a couple hours. Yeah. I also love to binge watch some stuff if I get a couple free hours. So,
all right, what books are you reading right now? And if not books, a podcast.
No, I am reading a couple books. I have a terrible habit of reading a quarter of a book and then setting it down. And the majority of the books
I'm right with you, dude.
Yeah.
The majority... That first quarter goes by in a week, and then the rest of the book takes like a month.
I rarely finish books. It's a terrible character flaw. And... So I have probably like 6 or 7 books right now on my table that I am just partially the way through. One of the things I've done more recently, though, is try to get into some reading that's more fiction and kind of just like for fun, because I feel like over the past 3 to 5 years, the only books I've bought are business and self-improvement related, which is great because that's what I've been focusing on. But also I don't enjoy reading those as much as I would some fiction or just, you know, something just for enjoyment. So I most recently just bought a book to just do that, so I can, you know, if I'm on the beach or hanging out at a coffee shop, I can actually sit down and read a book that's more just for fun versus always feeling like I have to. Yeah, go ahead.
What's the book?
I literally just got it like 2 days ago. It's historical fiction on like the Aztecs or something like that. I don't really know. It just looked interesting.
That's yeah, that does sound sick.
Yeah.
I think that's my people. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I come from Aztec or Mayan descent, but
okay.
I already like it.
Yeah.
All right. Final question is where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter as well. Not too much on the other platforms at this time. And then also you can email me if you want. Zach@collectibleshowcase.com. And yeah.
All right, perfect. Yeah, I'll throw those in the show notes as well. Dude, thank you so much for coming on the show. Yeah, I really appreciate it. I'm going to have that whole entrepreneurship group come on, and it's be great having you.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.